religion, they'd made flesh their arm, the blessing of God has lifted, and in its place a curse has come over those congregations. I've preached in many congregations, but I was assured we're under a curse. And you struggle and you fight and you preach, but there are very few results until the curse is dealt with. Without turning there, in Zechariah 5, Zechariah had a vision of a scroll that contained curses on both sides. One side was on the one who stole, and the other was on the one who perjured and swore falsely in the name of the Lord. And this curse entered into the houses of people and destroyed their houses. See? A lot of houses are destroyed because a curse has come in. Families are broken up because of a curse. I wonder how many New Zealanders would be under a curse if you included all those who stole and perjured themselves. How many are not honest in their tax returns? Do you realize that that could bring a curse on you? I tell you, in the United States, it would include a lot of people, and many of them would be churchgoers. Now, the next area of sources is men representing God. We just take a few. The first is Joshua. In Joshua chapter 6 and verse 26, after the children of Israel had miraculously captured the city of Jericho, Joshua pronounced a curse on anybody who would rebuild it. Joshua 6:26. Then Joshua charged them at that time, saying, "Cursed be the man before the Lord who rises up and builds this city Jericho. He shall lay its foundation with his firstborn, and with his youngest he shall set up its gates." I think you found the New International Version says he shall lay its foundation at the cost of his firstborn, and at the cost of his youngest he shall set up its gates. Now that was pronounced round about 1300 or so before Christ. Round about 800 before Christ, a man did that thing. And we can read about that in 1 Kings chapter 16, verse 34. 1 Kings chapter 16, verse 34. In his days, the days of King Ahab, which is approximately 400 or 500 years later, in his days, Hiel of Bethel built Jericho. He laid its foundation at the cost of Abiram, his firstborn, and at the cost of his youngest son, Segub, he set up its gates, according to the word of the Lord which he had spoken through Joshua the son of Nun. So 500 years later, the curse pronounced by Joshua was worked out in that man who rebuilt the city. It cost him two of his children. Can you imagine the doctors of that day trying to find out the cause of their death? No obvious medical reason. They just pined away. Can't find any virus, no known medical diagnosis, and yet they die. The doctors didn't know that the cause went back 500 years, see, to a curse that had been pronounced by a man of God as a judgment on a city which God determined should never be rebuilt. Can you see that you may be dealing with things in your life of which the cause can go back hundreds of years? Another example is David's words in his song after the death of Saul and Jonathan. In 2 Samuel chapter 1, verse 21. And I have to say, if you can take it in the right way, David was a tremendous curser. I don't mean in the sense we'd use it today, but he pronounced some hair-raising curses on some people. I mean, you read some of the Psalms, it makes your blood run cold just to think of it. See, that's part of the ministry of a man of God. Men of God not merely bless, they also curse. All right, this is what he said in this beautiful song about Saul and Jonathan. 2 Samuel chapter 1, verse 21. "O mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew, nor let there be rain upon you, nor fields of offerings. For the shield of the mighty is cast away there, the shield of Saul not anointed with oil." Does it make sense to talk to mountains? Or do you think that's just something strange? Well, I want to tell you, those words were spoken about 1,000 years before Christ. And we're now nearly 2,000 years after Christ. You can go to the mountains of Gilboa, and there is no green vegetation on them still today. Trees and vegetation will grow on every other mountain all around. And the government of Israel, which is very keen on reforesting the country, has tried to plant trees on that mountain, and they wouldn't grow. What's the reason? Words spoken by David 3,000 years ago, and the visible evidence is still there in the land of Israel today. That's real. If you don't, we don't need to turn there, but you remember the prophet Elisha had a servant named Gehazi? Gehazi disobeyed Elisha, ran after Naaman after he'd been miraculously healed and asked for money and clothing and hid it from Elisha. And when he came back, Elisha said, "Didn't my spirit go with you?" And then he said this, "The leprosy of Naaman the Syrian cleave to thee and thy seed forever." And and Gehazi went out a leper as white as snow. What was that the result of? A curse pronounced by a man of God. Turn to the New Testament and Jesus. In Mark chapter 11. Beginning at verse 12. "Now the next day, when they," that's Jesus and the disciples, "had come from Bethany, he was hungry. And seeing from afar a fig tree having leaves, he went to see if perhaps he would find something on it. And when he came to it, he found nothing but leaves, for it was not the season for figs." Now I believe, I'm not going to say for absolute sure, that in that type of fig tree, before the figs come, there's a small kind of round thing that comes first, which the Arabs call nafal, which means that which falls. Jesus was not so unreasonable as to expect figs when it was not the time, but he did come from the nafal. But the teaching is that if a tree doesn't bring forth the nafal, the first preliminary thing, it will not bring forth figs either. And so Jesus knew that that tree was fruitless. And what did he do? He spoke to the tree. Does that make sense? In response, Jesus said to it, "Let no one eat fruit from you ever again." And his disciples heard it. I'm sure they thought our master is just a little bit, gone a little bit too far. Going on now to verse 20. "Now in the morning, as they passed by, they saw the fig tree dried up from the roots." 24 hours later, the tree was totally dry. "And Peter, remembering, said to him, 'Rabbi, look, the fig tree which you cursed has withered away.'" Notice he said to Jesus, "You cursed it." That was the result. Jesus said, "Have faith in God." And if you like to look just for one other passage, parallel passage, in Matthew 21, verse 21, the same story says in verse 20, "Well, when the disciples saw the tree, they marveled, saying, 'How did the fig tree wither away so soon?' Jesus answered and said to them, 'Assuredly, I say to you, if you have faith and do not doubt, you will not only do what was done to the fig tree." What was done to the fig tree? It was cursed. But he said, "You can also speak to a mountain." But notice, he authorized them to curse things. He said, "You will not only do what is done to this fig tree." I tell you, the power we have, if we could but realize it, is frightening. We're really rather like Moses when God called him to go back to Egypt and deliver Israel. And he said, "I don't have anything. What can I go with?" And the Lord said to him, "What's that in your hand?" He said, "A shepherd's staff." The Lord said, "Throw it on the ground." What happened? When it touched the ground, it became a snake. And Moses ran from the very thing he'd been holding in his hand. Understand? And God said, "That's all you're going to need is your staff. Go back to Egypt and do the job." You see, a lot of us are like that. We're holding a staff in our hands. We don't realize that if we throw it on the ground, it can turn to a snake. Let me tell you a story. It's a true story. About 1965, I was associate pastor in a church in Chicago. And right on the corner, flush with the